Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host and tour guide, Yada. Each weekday morning on GCN, I strive to expose the beguiling and destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, with military and economic schemes. If you'll listen, your eyes may be opened and you may ultimately change your mind toward some of these human institutions. Instead of merely presenting the news this morning, my mission, along with my guest, Ben Barak, will be to help you understand what is actually occurring behind the headlines, all while predicting how these events will shape our world over the next 20 years. Then, during our second hour, we will engage Yahweh on his terms, by way of his one and only covenant, and through his always dependable Torah teaching, so that with his guidance, you'll be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship with him. Our phone number for those who would like to question, criticize, or affirm anything I have to say or that Ben has to say this morning is 877-376-45. Making his third appearance on our program, Ben Barak is an author. He has written a book called Unsung Davids. It is available at Amazon.com. You can reach Ben also by Googling Ben Barak, B-A-R-R-A-C-K. Barak is how Ben, I think, pronounces his name, but it's spelled B-A-R-R-A-C-K. Googling it is actually better than just putting in the URL, because when other people search for him, his name and his blog will appear prominently on your screen. One of the things that I particularly like about Ben is that he is extraordinarily well-informed as it relates to the most interesting issues of our day. And he is willing to present what he has discovered, regardless of whose sacred cows it may skewer. And so, with no further ado, welcome, Ben. How are you?
I'm great, Yana. Nice to be with you again.
Well, that's my pleasure. You probably know that Alex Jones is the lead host on the Genesis Communication Network. His program actually follows mine on this program.
Mm-hmm.
And I would you posted a review of Alex Jones' appearance on the Piers Morgan program
right.
A couple of days ago.
Right.
I'm going to honestly share my impressions of what I witnessed. But before I do, I'd like to hear yours. It was an extraordinary experience. Now, just one bit of introduction here. I had originally thought I was going to play segments of that interview, but decided not to for several reasons. One, it's quite long. It's I think all total it rambles on for about 14 minutes. But beyond that, if you really want to see it, you need to see it because it's the body language, the facial expressions, the finger pointing, the flushed face, all of that sort of thing, and the relative calm of Piers Morgan. That is, the visual show is even more, conveys even more, I think, than the words themselves.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, actually, when I watched that, I could not help but hearken back to an interview Piers did with Executive Director of Gun Owners of America, Larry Pratt, just last month.
Yes.
Or the previous month. And
yes.
In that interview, it was Piers Morgan who lost control, and it was Larry Pratt who maintained control while being incredibly informed on the gun control issue. And Larry Pratt, I believe, won that debate going away, and Piers Morgan looked like the petulant, argumentative, bombastic insulter of Pratt and came away, I think, the loser. And when you contrast that with what happened with Alex Jones, to your point, it was the optics more than anything else. I thought much of what Jones had to say, especially in the first half of the interview, was probably pretty good. But it was, like you say, it was the finger wagging, it was the anger, the righteous indignation on his part that I think turned people off. That interview actually made, in my estimation, Piers Morgan a more sympathetic character because he did not think him, you know, lower himself to a level like that. But I think that Alex's appeal is that he is so passionate and he's emphatic and he's got a very strong following, and you know, he definitely appealed to his base during that interview. And then the other aspect of it was, you know, you talk about optics. There's also another aspect to it, which involves the take that Alex Jones has about 9/11 and about the New World Order. Regardless of where you come down on that, Piers Morgan knew that all he had to do to torpedo Alex Jones' credibility with the majority of Americans was to ask that question about 9/11 and what his belief about it was, and it was bam. It made Alex look like a kook to a significant segment of American population. And
yeah, all of those who are informed. We'll return to the issues of was 9/11 an inside job, and also I'd love to have your views on conspiracy theory. But I'd like to disagree, if I may, with the with your summation of the alleged debate. I will agree wholeheartedly that Alex Jones' appeal is his over-the-top zeal, diatribes, if you will.
Yeah.
That kind of impassioned response does appeal to a great number of people. Always has, always will. Now, I did not think there was any viable substance to either person's point. Now, to say none is probably a bit of an exaggeration. I think that Alex Jones actually got two things, two statements in that had merit, and that Piers Morgan got none. So I'd like just to talk a little bit about the substance, because this, far more than just the entertainment value of the Piers Morgan Alex Jones debate, is the gun control debate itself. And so let's talk just a bit about some of the points that were raised and whether or not those there was an actual debate on fact in the interview. The first thing that Piers Morgan brought up is that Alex Jones had been promoting a petition to have Piers Morgan deported from the United States.
Right.
So you begin this. And if I were Piers Morgan, I would begin this. So your point here is that you want to undermine the First Amendment. You wish to negate the First Amendment, which allows for free speech, to buttress the Second Amendment. Is that your argument, Mr. Jones? Now, what response can you have to that? I mean, I know that we'll disagree here, but that's like Paul writing his letters to condemn the Torah when he claims that his religion is based upon the God who inspired the Torah. If you're going to attack yourself, you have no credibility. If you're going to say that the most important thing that's sacrosanct to Americans is the Second Amendment right to bear arms, you can't undermine the First Amendment to achieve your goal.
To be fair, it's like Ben just said, though. It's not like Alex Jones, you don't know what hot buttons to hit to get him to fly off the handle. I could call the man right now, and I can ask him three questions, and I can get a clip where he's raging mad.
So if the goal was theater to begin to fly off the handle, fine. But if the purpose is to have an actual debate, wouldn't you undermine a person's credibility by saying, how do you undermine the First Amendment to support the Second?
Okay, and then but what I'm saying, that's why he's not going to bring somebody. That's why Piers Morgan won't bring somebody like you. With Larry Pratt, he knew it was somebody that he could bully. With Alex Jones, he knew it was somebody that had an opposite view of him that he could get to fly off the handle and look like a kook.
Yeah, and as it turned out, with Larry Pratt, he didn't bully. He got he was soundly defeated by Pratt. Now, the next statement that comes out of his mind, evidently, the point that I'm making here is not resonating with my immediate audience, and I hope it is with other listeners, that if you're going to make a point, if you have to undermine your own foundation to make your point, you have no valid point. It is, I think it's the single biggest issue in terms of gun control. the Constitution does not allow the federal government or any state to bar Americans' rights to keep and to bear arms. There is no limitation on those arms. Any law that in any way infringes on an American's right to have a weapon is unconstitutional. And that would be all weapons. I mean, if an American wants to go out and buy a tank, according to the Constitution, he can have a tank. If he wants to have a cannon, he can have a cannon. If he wants to have an assault rifle that is fully automatic, he can have an assault rifle that's fully automatic. That's what the Constitution says. So any law that infringes on an American's right to bear arms because of the language in the Second Amendment is an argument against the Constitution. And since the government's only authority is the Constitution, it is undermining its own credibility. And it's its only source of credibility to advance its agenda. That is self-mutilating. It's suicidal.
Right.
And it is the single, from my perspective, it's the single biggest issue. You can't have any credibility as a law-making body, the U.S. Congress, in terms of making laws infringing on gun ownership, since to do so, you have to undermine the only reason that you have any legitimacy, which is the U.S. Constitution.
You're pulling on my heartstrings here, Yada, with this owning a tank business. but all that to say, if there's one thing that could be, one argument that could be made for the Piers Morgan petition, it would be the how do you like it? Turnabout is fair play. Why don't you experience what it's like to have one of our amendments threatened? That would be the only argument that could be made. And I think that the petition that was submitted wasn't done in all seriousness. I think it was done
as a plot.
At least that's what I took away from it.
But the fact remains that the U.S. Constitution and the Second Amendment equates gun ownership to the relationship between armed militias, which are private individuals, the masses of people who are armed in such a way that they can confront their government and other governments.
Right.
It is, they say that, a militia is necessary to a free society.
Right.
And therefore, it envisions the population owning all forms of weapons that would be used by a militia. And so you can't infringe on gun ownership without undermining the U.S. Constitution. The only approach is to amend it, which they can't do. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We'll be back in a moment. Back to Shattering Myths. If you'd like to engage in this discussion, you're more than welcome to participate. Our number is 877-300-7645. We're on with Ben Barek. Ben is the author of Unsung Davids. You can buy it at Amazon.com. It's a very good read, and his blog, I think, is one of the best available online. Barak Now, blogspot.com. But if you just type in Ben, B-A-R-R-A-C-K, you into your favorite search engine, it will come up first and foremost. Speaking of first and foremost, after saying hello, Alex Jones began a rant where he said the Russian and Chinese governments, globalism, brag that they are trying to take away our guns. Now, that's not true. But beyond that, he says they have all of our guns except the Swiss, and then began to talk about drones. So I did just a quick fact check, because it strikes me that that America and Switzerland are not the only two countries that where the average citizen or a significant percentage of citizens have guns. In the United States, 89% of Americans have a gun. In Serbia, it's 58%. That's a European country. In Yemen, 57%. Switzerland is 46%. Cyprus is 36%. Saudi Arabia is 35%. Iraq, 34%. Finland, 32%. A third of the citizens of Finland have guns. In Uruguay, 32%, South American country. Sweden, Northern European country, 32%. Norway, a neighbor, 32%. in the heartland of Europe, in France, one third of the citizens of France have guns. In Canada, 31%. In Austria, 30%. In Germany, 30% of German citizens are armed. I haven't looked at some interesting places like New Zealand at 23%. About a quarter of New Zealands have a weapon. 23% of the Greeks, 6.2% in jolly old England. So the statement just factually isn't true. Why do you think that somebody would discredit themselves by making an opening comment? Because it wasn't a response to a question, so that this was their designed opening comment. Why would somebody do that, Ben?
Alarmism. It would seem to me that's my reaction, and I had no idea of those figures. That's fascinating. But I would say it's alarmism. And when you make that statement as emphatically as he did, that only pours fuel on the fire. So that's the only thing that you can deduce from something like that. Unless he's just misinformed, which, you know, he's in the media business. He reads material constantly.
Yeah, he calls his show InfoWars. Right. You know, so that's with the information. You know, what I cited here is not understanding. It's just simply knowledge. It took me all of about 15 seconds this morning to put that list together, and, you know, I could go down and read some 200 other names from the list. So why would you? It's just astonishing to me that somebody would begin their a discussion by citing something that is factually untrue.
Well,
you know,
and if
it makes you so vulnerable,
right? Exactly. It calls every other position that he holds, or anybody holds, into question, especially if when presented with those facts, you don't say, oh, wait a minute, I was wrong, let me issue a retraction, let me make a correction. You know, it's the search versus search for truth versus the search to further an agenda. And I'm not saying that's what's happening, but that's the kind of thing that people who push an agenda do. They don't want facts because it harms the agenda. So,
yes. Are they either that or they're very selective in their facts?
Right.
And in fact, what we're going to see, we're going to go to Piers Morgan being very selective in his facts. In debate parlance, they call it a red herring. When you introduce something that may be true, it's just not germane to the point that you're trying to make.
Right.
So let's go to Piers Morgan. Finally, gets Alex after about 5 minutes of just going off the deep end and saying that 1776 is going to happen again. Again, and pointing his finger and face turning red if you attempt to take away our guns, and then going off onto Prozac as if Prozac was related to the gun issue. Kind of interesting, however, that there were 37,000 suicides in America and 12,000 gun deaths. So Piers Morgan said, okay, let's have a debate. So his first question was, how many gun murders were there in the U.S. last year? And the answer is just under 12,000. And Alex knew the answer to the question, but it's not germane to the discussion of gun control.
Right.
Because in gun control, what they're trying to do is eliminate the assault rifle.
Right.
Which is, by the way, if you were to have a poster child for the Second Amendment and the right to bear arms within the construct of a militia protecting our freedoms, it would be, the poster child for that would be the assault rifle. You know how many gun deaths last year were perpetrated by rifles of all kinds?
No.
300 against the 12,000. So we're going to consider that fact, as Alex would say, factoid, when we return to Shattering Myths in a moment. Hello, welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. We're here with Ben Barek, who is a talk show host himself, an investigative journalist and author, having written a book called Unsung Davids, and a very active blogger. You can read his blog at baroknow.blogspot.com. Fascinating, his investigations into a variety of issues that are actually shaping the world that we live in. We ended the last segment by denoting the fact that that last year there were about 11,000 to 12,000 gun deaths, of which about 300 of them were caused by rifles. So when Piers Morgan decided that he was going to put in the red herring by asking how many gun deaths occurred last year, and he wanted to hear the number 12,000 so he could compare it to the number 35 or so, which were the gun deaths in England last year, it is a red herring. Because what they want to do is limit people's access to assault rifles, and rifles are only responsible for 2.5% of all gun fatalities in America. So why do you think that old Piers Morgan thought that the best way to approach this was to use a red herring?
Because it's about a bigger agenda. The bigger agenda is to ban assault weapons. And on top of that, what he didn't say, and I thought Jones did okay with, is bringing up the knife comment. There was an article, I believe it was in the Daily Telegraph, maybe, not too long ago, that the UK is the most violent crime. It is the home to the most violent crime in the world, or Europe. I forget which number it was, but it was much more.
They surveyed 17 countries, of which Europe and the U.S. were in that mix. And you're correct. And that was really the point that I wanted to make rather than Alex not being willing to answer his question, it'd have been so much better if Alex had just been prepared.
Right.
You're going to go into a debate on gun control, and you're going to do it with Brett. Don't you think you'd go in with a little bit of preparation and just like you did? I mean, the reason I love to have you on the program is that you did the logical thing. You knew that having put up that I was going to look at your blog and pick an item from your blog to talk about this morning.
Right.
And you knew that the salient point here was that Piers Morgan wanted to say, because there were 30 some odd gun deaths in the UK last year or in England last year versus 12,000 gun deaths in America last year, that gun control is a good thing.
Right.
That was his argument. And so what did you do? You went and said, well, is the issue really guns, or is the UK actually as violent or more violent than the United States? And you immediately found there are two articles. One is by the Daily Mail, the other one's by the Telegraph, prominent UK publications. One did a survey in 1999. The other one's the article is far more recent, I think, in the range of 2009, July 2009. And guess what they show? Exactly what you said. You know that the violent crime per capita each year in the UK is that 3.6% of the citizens in the UK are victims of violent crime each year versus less than half of that in the United States?
Yeah, it's very telling. And, you know, when you bring those kinds of facts up to the likes of Piers Morgan, it doesn't fit his agenda, and he will ignore it. In fact, something similar was brought to his attention with Pratt, and he just blew right by it. So when you see people blowing by facts, you know that there's an agenda involved, because when they blow by facts, they don't have the excuse that they didn't know, or that they were ignorant of the facts. The facts are being presented to you, and you're willfully ignoring them. Then you don't
have a case. You know,
that's
my view in debate, if you say something that is untrue and debate partner proves it is untrue, the debate's over. You've lost your credibility. You've tried to make an argument that is contrary to the facts. And in this particular case, the argument, which was a red herring that Piers Morgan wanted to make, is that Europe is less violent than the United States by a gargantuan magnitude, 30-some-odd to 12,000 deaths from guns, when in fact the assault rifles that he wants to ban were only responsible for 300 deaths. And you look at the Great Britain. Great Britain's about one-fifth the size of the United States. Mm-hmm. England is. Do the math against his number, and you're actually within the same frame of reference, because in England, the gun deaths are by rifle, and you compare them by the rifle gun deaths in America, and you actually have a very comparable number. But here's some facts. The International Crime Report that was conducted, there's been two here, one in back in 1999, another one 10 years later. Both came up with exact same findings. Revealed that 3.6% of the population of England and Wales were victims of violent crime, second only to Australia, where the figures was 4.1%. Scotland had a slightly lower rate of violence at 3.4%. In the U.S., only 2% of the populations suffered an assault or robbery or were victim of a violent crime. The study looked at crime rates in 12 Western European countries, plus Poland, Canada, the U.S., Australia, and Japan. So those are the 17 countries. The chances of becoming a victim of any crime in England and Wales was second only to Australia. Here, now this is here, is in the U.K., in England, because this is an article written in England. 26% suffered from crime against an average across all countries of just 21%. England and Wales are among the countries most pressured by crime, the report concludes. The two countries had equally high crime per head population in the report. However, what they said is that the statistical anomalies are so tight between Australia, which has a growing drug problem in Sydney, which is the reason for its problem, and England, that it could well be assessed that England is the single most dangerous country in the world to live.
And you talk about the figures, the likes of peers would love to talk about the 11,000 figure, but completely avoids the suicides that are committed by those guns, and the suicides can happen in a variety of ways. You don't have to just use a gun. So no guns, and somebody still wants to kill themselves, they will jump out of a building or whatever. But you've got that, and then you've got police. I don't know that he's including police shootings where they're totally justified. So it's apples and oranges, and he reaches a conclusion using a formula that omits several variables, and you just can't do that
if you don't put facts in a context whereby they can be understood, you're going to mislead yourself and others 100% of the time, as is the case here. As it relates to suicides, there were 37,000, 38,000 suicides in the United States. That's the average per year, between 37,000 and 38,000. Of those, 90% of those who commit suicide have a recorded medical disorder, a psychiatric disorder. The majority of them are heavy drug users, and those who are not are typically alcoholics. 50% of those who commit suicide in the United States use a gun to commit suicide. But had there not been a gun, they would have committed suicide any other way. And so it's they're not counted in these in the number of gun murders in the United States. They're not part of the 12,000. There's actually a separate subset. But in this particular case, it is a fact that 90% of those who commit suicide do have a psychiatric problem. Most of them have become dependent on alcohol or drugs. They're looking for a further escape from life. You know, people become alcoholics, they typically become drug abusers because they're trying to escape life. And when that escape no longer provides the kind of numbing that they require, they just simply take themselves out. Yeah, Alex did make the point that of the gun deaths in America, that I think he said 80% were gang-related. The actual number is 71%, but it's close. I won't criticize that. 71% of gun deaths in America are gang-related. If you were to expand that to gang and drug-related, you probably would have a higher percentage still.
And obviously, if you ban guns, those 71% are not going to give them up. They're going to keep them because that's what they do. They're criminals.
Correct. Correct. I happen to be a gun advocate. I don't hunt with my guns. I use them for target practice. I'm a firm believer that America is a freer, safer country when its citizens adhere to its constitution and express the right to bear arms than the country is when Americans were disarmed. So my concern here with Alex is that we happen to be on the same side on this issue, but when somebody who shares your same conclusion performs that badly, I think it's a detriment to your cause, not an asset to the cause.
Absolutely. It was almost as if, not to belabor the Larry Pratt interview, but it was almost as if Piers learned from the initial interview and learned that being calm and having an opponent who becomes unhinged is the formula for a good debate. And he got that with the Alex Jones.
You know, it is extremely easy to become unhinged in a television or radio interview. I've done just shy of 3,000 of them,
mm-hmm.
And so as performing the role that you're performing now as the guest, as an expert,
right,
on a variety of subjects, and of course most of the time I was an expert on the direct correlation between Islam and terrorism, which is a subject that any politically correct host is going to do everything they can to discredit me and to get me to go off the deep end. So I have been where Alex was some 3,000 times, and I can tell you that there are times where it is difficult to maintain your cool.
Yep.
But if you don't, you lose all credibility. And when we return, we're going to talk a little bit about 9/11 and conspiracy theories with my good friend Ben Barak. Back to Shattering Mist. I'm your host, Yana. We're here with Ben Barak, speaking about the gun control debate in America. There was an outgrowth, though, of the splashiest incident regarding the gun control debate, which, of course, was the interview that so many people are talking about between Alex Jones and Piers Morgan. There were a couple of things that were raised at the end of that debate that I do want to get Ben to comment on, and then so that you know, 1 week from today, Ben's going to come back. We're going to talk about whether or not Hillary also blamed the Islamic movie for the Benghazi attacks and what the consequences for America, what that means to you. Also, there was a Pravda article that he has posted on his blog that is extraordinarily insightful into how America is being manipulated, I think we would be amiss if we did not discuss Al Gore's sale of his current TV to Al Jazeera. Those would be the three topics a week from today. So I promised you I was going to ask you what your view is of 9/11 as to whether or not there is any credibility to the Alex Jones conspiracy theory that it was an inside job, that it was not perpetrated by 19 Muslims, mostly from Saudi Arabia, screaming Allahu Akbar and flying planes into those buildings.
Yeah, with tens of thousands of witnesses in at least three of those attacks. But I mean, you take for example the earlier argument that was made about guns by Alex Jones, where he went and found facts that refuted that. The same thing could be applied here. There's an attempt by some to really push this notion, and it's been going on for quite a while. And it's I come down obviously that it's not, that is not what happened.
Right.
George Bush, and I have been as critical of George Bush as anybody, George Bush was not responsible directly for 9/11. He did not blow up the towers. That is a falsehood verified by tens of thousands of pairs of eyes, for one. But it's also destructive. It's destructive to deny this, because you know who else is 9/11 truthers? Are the Muslim Brotherhoods. The group Muslim Brotherhoods. Yeah. The group.
Correct. They're on the same. They're on the same side here.
That's right.
Alex Jones. It's so obvious that it wasn't an inside job.
Right.
That when you go down that road, what you do is you isolate yourself as a kook.
Right.
Now I understand the road that I go down in the second half of this program, which is to compare Yahweh's testimony in his Torah, prophets, and Psalms to Christian and Jewish and in Islamic doctrine is so out of the mainstream view. But I back it up by evidence and reason, and I take criticism from everybody for doing so. But it's an entirely different story when you've got to ignore as opposed to rely on the facts to make a case like this. It's one thing to come out cough as out of step with the mainstream for telling the truth. It's another thing to destroy your credibility by promoting a lie.
Yeah, and that's and Piers Morgan knew that, and that's why it was so effective. And you saw it. It didn't just harm his credibility with 9/11. It harmed his credibility
on everything.
Yeah. Because there's an agenda at work, with stuff like this, and that's what people need to get.
Yeah. Speaking of credibility, you have probably done some study as an investigative journalist into the conspiracy theories, Council on Foreign Relations, the Roundtable in England et al., and probably have some conclusions as to whether there's an influence in Weinstein's conception of the Order of the Illumes and whether it's influencing events today. What's your conclusion?
I don't know enough about that to comment on it. I do know that there are elements of it that I believe are accurate. But to be an expert on that, I don't feel qualified enough to talk about it. But I do believe there is something there. And you talk about the Council on Foreign Relations. I think that there is a connection with members on certain boards like CFR and the Islamic world. I mean, I believe that Faisal Abdul Rauf has been a contributor to the Council on Foreign Relations. So there's a lot of nexuses there, if you will. And I'm not as well read on that.
I actually think that's a very astute response, and I'll comment briefly on it as we move into the second hour on Adam Weishaupt's legacy in the New World Order. But thank you, Ben. We look forward to having you back next week at this time.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of longevity.